Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we are recording this actually on Tuesday the 17th. It's going to be played on the 21st, which is probably when you're hearing it. And
if you're not hearing it right now, then you
then
wouldn't
you
know that I was
know.
Saying
no.
that. Right.
Yeah, that's, so we wouldn't. It gets very confusing when we start moving time around like
right.
this.
Right.
You know, like what time is it on the moon?
That's Greenwich Mean Time.
That's pretty mean.
Right.
Well, actually, we don't use
Universal Greenwich. Standard.
Universal Coordinated Time.
Right.
It's UCT, which is University of Central Texas, but that's totally beside the point. Anyway, this is the Personal Wealth Coach. And we talk about things to do with finance and investing and things of that ilk. And we were talking about the economy. And unfortunately, for a lot of people who don't like this, we actually see a lot of good things in the economy. We do continue to say, and I'm still saying, and the economists that I listen to are continuing to forecast that sometime in the next year, we're going to start to see interest rates rise. Right
yep.
now, the bond market is, we can look at the interest rates on the longer-term tips and things like that, and we can see that there seems to be a consensus that about this time next year, the Federal Reserve will be raising interest rates, and sometime about September, they'll be raising them again. Now, whether that's going to happen that way or not, we don't know, but the only reason they would raise rates is because they anticipate the people who buy and sell bonds on the open market are anticipating the economy to be in a lot better shape by this time next year,
right.
and a whole lot better shape as time goes by. And there's a lot of evidence that supports that position. Now, there's some things that can really mess it up. There's a few people that are saying that the Chinese credit bubble could burst and wreck everything.
Actually, I think that the reverse was going to happen there. One of the issues that we're seeing with China is that the cost of labor has come up in China, so that a lot of the work that they were doing even 2 years ago has moved to other countries. So they're not getting the same kind of growth rate that they had before. The people aren't mm-hmm. going to them for the cheap labor because they've emerged. They're emerging. The people that were working there for peanuts before think that peanuts should be only for elephants, which I don't blame them for. Over a long period
they
of time,
peanuts in China.
I think they work.
I think
they,
it's more like rice nuts or
could
something.
Could be. All right. So the concept here, though, that as their economy has come up, the cost of wages has come up, the cost of living has come up, and that means that they have to get competitive just like we do on the labor market.
Well, one of the what I was referring to is that the fundamental reason the Chinese did not go through a recession is there was a tremendous amount of open credit extended
right.
by banks, which are under the control of the Chinese government. And there is increasing evidence that maybe some of those debts aren't going to get paid back. Here's
correct.
The thing that I think the economists are missing that are
yeah, not, and
worrying
I have something
about
to,
this.
I have something to add that to that as well.
Is the Chinese government owns those banks. It's
right.
not like, I mean, all they have to do is say, oh, okay, you couldn't repay your debt. We'll replace that money with the extra money that we have.
Right. They have sovereign funds that
and,
are
well,
worth right, lots of money.
And the other thing that's important to realize is that they have a closed currency system. It's not, they don't allow their currency to leave the country except
it's
in
not,
very, very
yeah.
minor amounts.
It's not traded over
and,
borders.
Right. So, and it's based on the dollar. And so in order to get the kind of collapse that we had in the United States, you have to have a free market system.
Yeah.
And while they do have a limited free market system, the bottom line to it is there have been companies that go bankrupt, the investors lose their money, but the Chinese government ensures that the shock is not too great.
Yeah, and this is the point that I wanted to make. What role does China play on the world stage right now as far as its economy is concerned? It pulls in raw material and it spits out things. It spits out things because they have a very
manufactured things. Right.
Their labor market has been so good. If that bubble pops, then a lot of people that feel like they're very wealthy right now are going to feel like they're not so wealthy
anymore.
In
China, you're talking
about. In China.
Right.
So their role on the world stage, they grew too fast. They have a lot of people there that have more money than they should have for the amount of work that they did. Just like here in 2007, 2008, a lot of people felt very wealthy because their house price had gone up so much. So they were getting these home equity loans, and they thought this was the same as real money. Well, it's not. There's differences here. And what's going on in China, if they have the same kind of bubble where they're unable to pay the debts, first, the government will probably forgive it to some extent, but they will require some form of payment. That's what governments do, which probably means that their labor costs will drop again because people will not feel so wealthy, then they will not be demanding the same amount. So for the short term, at least, this is actually a good thing for China to have this growing pain in that their country grew too fast to sustain the growth rate. It needs to slow down before it can speed up again. And that's my two cents on that.
Well, it really boils down to the fact that while there's a lot of surprises on the horizon, and there's going to be surprises, the United States economy is actually in such solid, healthy condition right now that there's just, very frankly, not a lot to worry about. And yet we do have a tremendous amount of worry. And the combination of two things, if I look out there and I see that there's not a lot to worry about, there's not any indications that anything is completely out of control, and yet a lot of people are terribly worried about it, all I got to say is I think we're in for some good times ahead. And it is a good time to be planning long-term and investing.
I agree. I think that when we're talking about these big events overseas and we talk about the threats from Russia or the threats from ISIS or the threats from here or from there, there is a big picture that we can easily miss by following the drama of the moment. If you look at the drama of the moment in World War II, it was a lot worse than now. And if you look at the economy of the United States, it tends to function very well in crises. This is the sort of thing that we do. We function in difficult times, and we get better because of it. We've just come through some pretty amazingly difficult times, and we're coming out of it with a great deal of innovation that really hasn't hit the market yet. New types of technology that are coming out and are still being born. The fact that 3D printing is where it is right now has a lot to do with a lot of people sitting in their garage when they were not working because they couldn't work. So they were building things and making new technology that didn't exist before.
I have a problem there. I don't have a garage.
Well, let's see. That's a problem. Where are you going to go when you don't have a place to go to work?
My back porch?
You could go on, yeah. Okay. You could set up a workshop on your back porch.
I already have one, thank you.
Yeah, Michael Dell would not, well, he did it in his dorm room. He didn't have a garage either.
That's the problem,
oh,
see.
Oh, my goodness. We got to get garages.
Yeah, but he didn't actually invent anything. He just started selling something that was already there.
This is. See, I think one of the entitlement programs that could take some serious reform is the unemployment system. Instead of giving out pure money, they should provide garages.
Well, you know, they have garage sales regularly, and I have been to a lot of those, but they won't ever sell their garages. and you know, that is a problem. I think that's false advertising, and we should deal with that.
Now, there is a thing on the horizon that I should tell you about, and that is there are places springing up all over the country, figuratively speaking, of course. I'm not thinking that they actually are springing up, but they're facilities, factory floors, that are shared work environment, so that if you buy a subscription or a membership to the club, you get to use the facilities, and some of these machines are extremely expensive.
You get to use the floor of the factory?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can use the floor. Okay. That's generally used for walking. I don't even think that you need a membership for that.
Okay.
But you can actually use the floor if you wish.
So there's machines in there.
Yes, and they're very expensive machines that can be used by, you know, they give training and so on. But this sort of innovation, there's a lot of it going on. I live in Austin and I see a lot of it. I see people coming up with ideas that when they actually hit, they're the pieces of productivity growth that haven't hit even yet that are still coming.
One of the things that we're going to have to do is, we got about a minute before we have to take a break.
Right.
There's a long-term picture that's forming up, and you can write this down, and 15 years from now, you can come back and tell me whether I was right or wrong. But we're going to have, over the next 5 to 10 years, some ups and downs. But at about the 10-year point from here, I strongly suspect we're going to see the market take off like the proverbial rocket ship, based on some phenomenal new technology and new things that are out there. We're going to go like gangbusters for about 5 years and then fall off the cliff. So that's my forecast of the future. But
that's
right now, we're in really good shape.
Yeah, we're going to have to play some commercials in just a moment. But
you are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
If you'd like to reach us off the air for next week's show, you can reach us voicemail at 947-1111 or 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. Or you can email us at jake@tpwc.com or jeff@tpwc.com. We actually have a few seconds left, so I'm running out of breath.
Out of breath. And we'll be back after these important words from KTM sponsors. And we're back with more of The Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And for those of you who are just tuning in, or if you're just listening, or maybe you listened before and totally forgot, this is a recorded show, or it's not a show, actually.
It's more like a program.
It's a program. It's a program.
It's really programmed this time.
And you can, there's no point in calling in because either they won't answer the phone or the person won't be on the air at any rate. So,
well, you could call in and have a conversation with them, but I don't think that
I know they probably wouldn't even answer the phone.
Yeah,
so anyway, so this is The Personal Wealth Coach, though, and we'll be back next week with hopefully a live show. We're still off doing other things, and we didn't want to just be out of the loop too terribly long.
We got canceled for some kind of a game where they were kicking things around on a field, and
they were socking her.
Yeah, soccer. I barely know her.
Right, and it was that's what was going on. We were talking about the general, so we're trying to talk about general economic issues with the market up around a little over 10% this year, at least at midweek when we're doing this recording. And it looks 10% for this year. It's actually up about 5% in the first half of the year. It's on a rate to go up about 10% of the year for the year. A lot of people are saying, and we were talking about this earlier, that at least, let me put it like this. A lot of people on Fox are saying that the market is going to crash because the Fed is cutting back on their bond purchases, and we just don't see any evidence of that. As a matter of fact, the reason the Fed is pulling back is because we're seeing a lot more health in the economy. We're seeing that the Fed doesn't need to make bond purchases because, and again, the evidence is there. We have about a 7% increase in tax revenues this year over last year, meaning that there's a lot more people out there making more money. And when they make more money, they're going to have a tendency to spend it for the very simple reason that we've managed to pay down an awful lot of our debt. A lot of the short-term credit card debt and so on has actually been paid down in the United States. And people are getting pretty close to ready to spend again.
Right. There's a couple of things that I'm really looking forward to. And that is when the breakdown of what money coming from where comes out. When we figure out if it's new taxes that are bringing in the money or if it's old taxes, what the tax revenue per tax bracket is. And I get really geeked out over that sort of thing. This is the sort of thing. We don't know if it is the new tax on dividends or if it's the new tax on people above $200,000 of income or $250,000 of income. We don't know what's causing the spike in revenue. We do know that more people are working by far than there were last year, and more people are working now than at the peak of the market before the recession.
I have a data point on it.
Oh, go ahead.
And that is the vast majority of that 7% increase in revenues came from withholding. And people who are in the very
You don't have estimated taxes there.
And the people who are in the very, very, very high positions where they're paying taxes on dividends and so on don't have payroll withholding. So the majority of it came out of payroll withholding. And that just, it simply indicates that we're seeing more people employed, which matches with the rest of the data. And it matches with the fact that we have seen so far this year compared with last year, about a 4% increase in consumer spending. And the consumer spending that we're seeing is retail sales. When we say consumer spending, we're talking about retail sales. We're not talking about big ticket items.
Nope.
We're talking about regular, ordinary people going out and buying things at regular, ordinary stores. So what we're seeing is not, I don't think, I'm sure, it's not upper income people who are paying the extra tax on dividends as much as it is the people in the middle and lower end of the income scale who are just working again.
Right.
And as the jobs return, we're going to see those people spending money because that group of people, the people in the lower half of the income scale, have a tendency to spend it as soon as they get it because they're living at a standard of living that basically eats up all of their income.
Right.
And upper income people, when they have extra money, they have a tendency not to spend it. So if we didn't see the retail sales rising, I might think it was the tax for people over $250,000 or so. But
right.
I think really what it is just we have a lot more people working.
I'm going to make a prediction.
You are?
Yes.
I'll predict that you're going to make a prediction.
Oh, you're already correct.
See?
That's amazing. All right. My wife, when she's giving me directions, she says, you're going to make a left turn up here. And she makes predictions like nobody's business because I generally make the turn that she's predicted when she's giving me directions. Her accuracy rate, if she could be an economist, would be off the scale. My prediction is probably not.
But you probably make about as many left turns as you do right turns.
That's about right, yeah.
So she is sort of like an economist
right.
in that. She
yeah.
says, well, first we're going to go one way, then we're going to go the other.
Yeah, exactly. As far as the prediction from me, this is Jake, on the economy. It's in the housing world. We have a buildup of pent-up demand. There are people that have been saving money to buy a house, and they will eventually buy a house. And what I'm seeing is that the number of people living with their parents that are over the age of 25 is getting pretty staggeringly large. And I'm not going to go into percentages. I'm not going to go into the raw numbers here because people tend to swerve off the road when they're listening to us when we start quoting numbers. What I will say is it's way above average. There are generally between 24 and 26, people start looking around at renting. And then between the ages of 28 and 31, they start looking at buying. That's what has been historically. Well, those ages have moved up recently. And if you consider the fact that 28 to 31 considering buying, in a lot of cases, they're still living at home being with the parents. That's not going to last. Multifamily housing, as far as single family residents with multifamilies in it, is at a very high rate. It's the highest since it's been tracked, which means that's not going to last. As Americans, we generally don't think of the normal tradition in Europe, which is multi-generational people living. People tend to move back into, the mother might wind up moving in with the kids at the point when she needs help being taken care of, not kids moving back and staying with the parents. That doesn't last forever. The feathers get removed from the nest eventually if they are saving, which is what we're seeing in the numbers. Over the next 2 years or 3 years, we're going to see a pretty good-sized new home or existing home sale rise. And that's just based on the numbers that I'm looking at. We made the same prediction about cars a few years back and about washing machines, for that matter, a few years back, and we were right. Because people were waiting to buy their cars. They were looking at the car that they had, and they said, I'll drive it for a little bit longer. Well, eventually, you have to replace the car because it's falling apart. That's still going on, but we're seeing this boom in car sales that comes directly from this. And the housing sales it may not have anything like the boom that happened in 2006 and 2007, but we will see some return to normalcy there.
Well, I don't think we're going to see that kind of boom where they're building more houses than there are people to live in.
Too many people got burned.
But you're right about the pent-up demand, and there's another thing going on, and that is as the banks hurt more and more because they're not making loans, the regulators are slowly relaxing the vigor with which they prevent them from making loans.
Right.
And so you've got, from one side, you have people saving money to buy a house, moving up the scale, if you will, and you've got the banks gradually lowering the standards by which they will determine who gets a loan.
Right.
Eventually, these two things are going to come together.
Yeah.
And when they do, it's going to produce a burst of energy that, by the way, when it happens, everybody say, oh, this could go on forever.
Well, I think everybody will be scared at the beginning, that the banks will go, whoa, we're mm-hmm. loaning out too much money, and then we'll see it stop for a bit, and then we'll do it again, and then mm-hmm. eventually we'll get, this will go on forever, and then we'll have another bubble and bust. Though I don't think it'll be anywhere near as big.
Well, fundamentally, like you're right, as long as everybody's afraid, I think we're probably in really, really good shape, and nothing untoward is likely to happen.
Right.
The point at which people cease to be afraid and you hear things like permanent plateau of prosperity and
that's just hard to say. So when people say it, you can hear it and you go, oh,
you have to be
like a Yale professor
to say that. Okay.
It's funny how often the professors at Yale say that just at the wrong moment. We can clock it and say, oh, there mm-hmm. we go. There's our signal. Get out of whatever is going on.
Basically, if you want to know what the economy and the market is going to do, listen to the mainstream media, whether you're on the left or the right, just listen to it. And whatever they're most afraid of and warning of is the thing least likely to happen.
Right, exactly.
And the opposite is probably going to happen. So when you hear this could go on forever, it's probably a pretty bad sign.
Yeah, or it's different this time.
Yes.
Those are bad things. And when we talk about this particular section of the economy functioning in a more long-term than short-term level, it's just a different form of echo of history. It's not different. It is very similar to things that we've had happen in the past.
And I just wanted to throw one little item in there. I want to throw in and I told you so. I caught a lot of flack.
Ouch.
Back in the end of 2008 when President Obama was elected.
Uh-huh.
I said at the beginning of 2009, Democrats are good for the market, Republicans are bad for the market.
Right.
Well, if you take a look at the 8 years under George W. Bush,
mm-hmm.
you will discover that the market went down rather dramatically. And if you think about the fact that the market was, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was 7,000 or 8,000, I don't remember right in that vicinity, when President Obama was elected, and you look at where it is today, there's a subtle difference in its level. And it'd be really interesting. Very frankly, I think the next president will probably be a Democrat. I think the market will continue upward. I think it will really tick off a lot of Republicans when it does, if we follow suit in history. And we just have a ways to go.
All right. Well, we've got to play some commercials. So we'll be back after the break, and we'll talk about some more. That may have sparked some fires right there. So we'll talk about that, talk about whether or not that was a politically motivated statement or not.
No, it actually was not a politically motivated statement. The whole issue was that there's just economic reality. We're going to be setting at a boom at that point.
Yeah, we'll talk about that after the commercials. So after the break, we'll be back. This is the Personal Wealth Coach.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we're just a little bit off-coordinated here, this recorded show that we're doing off-site. So, you know, you're welcome to call in, but there's not going to be anybody answering the phone. But this is the Personal Wealth Coach. And if you do listen to something that we're saying along the way and you said, man, I really would like to respond to that, you're certainly welcome to give our voicemail a call. You're hearing this on a weekend. We have actually people who will take down your message during the week, but you can call 947-1111 locally or
1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. Again, on a weekend, that's voicemail.
Okay. Now, at the end of the last segment of this show, I made a comment that could have been taken politically. It's not politically. It's just reality. And the reality is that the economy shows every sign of being in full recovery mode about the next presidential election. And historically, what Americans do is whatever party is in the White House
gets the credit.
If the economy is doing exceptionally well, is the one, this is in 2016, is the one that's going to get the credit. So the probabilities are that the economy will be doing well at that point. So the opportunity, and I also think, by the way, at the midterm elections, there's a pretty high probability that we're going to see a Republican sweep. We're going to see the Senate and the House have Republican majorities.
I think that's the fulcrum point, how they govern there.
But
what they do and how they do it, if they're controversial, if they're doing things just to put a stick in the gears, that's not going
to
work.
Yeah, it's one thing to backbench and to fight and to say we're not going to do it this way, and it's another thing to come up with a plan. And here's the interesting point. Nobody that I know of suggests that the Senate could possibly be in a position where it could override a veto.
Right. Or even a filibuster, for that matter.
And so this is the point that's going to be a little bit awkward, to say the least, and that is if the Republican Party manages to change its stripes a little bit and produces effective bills, they may not be sponsored by the president, they may not be the president's favorite bills, but produce some effective means of dealing with long-term problems that we're going to have.
We might actually get a Republican president.
We could. Now, on the other hand, if the role of the Republicans continues to be anti-government, anti-negativity, if we don't get for instance, American people, massively every poll says they want an immigration bill, and they massively want to basically acknowledge the fact that the people who are here and they're not leaving.
Yeah, well, if we go back to the Democratic election, the presidential election, when the president was first coming into office, the Republicans had a pretty good sitting in the House and in the Senate. They started announcing that their number one priority was to have the president not be elected at the next election. That's not the role of the House or the Senate. The House or the Senate, you're supposed to govern. If your goal is a negative, you're not going to get reelected. If you have a goal that you can say, this is what we stand for, fair taxes or legitimate immigration reform or education reform, then go on that platform. Don't go against other things. This is the reason why John Kerry was not president when George W. Bush had really, really bad approval ratings, is because his whole platform was anti-George Bush.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you're party stands for anti something, it's not going to win. And that's true if it's a Democrat or a Republican. And when we're talking about the House and the Senate, if they provide constructive leadership from the legislature, then somebody from the legislature, somebody that organizes it properly, could become the president. Somebody that can take a group of people like what we have right there, that there's a lot of people from the Tea Party. They don't want to cooperate even with the Republicans.
Well, what's really funny, the person who at least apparently quietly was being considered to be a really, really good candidate to be president of the United States, as a matter of fact, they were going to make him Speaker of the House so he could have a stepping stone to be president, was Eric Cantor.
Well, yeah.
So I think there's this... And then we've got a couple of years before this actually starts to happen, but it is really be interesting to see. I would love to see I've been a Republican for as long as I've been an adult.
Let me give a piece of history here. Very recent history. Jack Ryan. Do you remember Jack Ryan?
I remember a fictional person named Jack Ryan.
There's a real person named Jack Ryan, and he was running for the Senate in Chicago, in Illinois.
Right.
And he was a shoo-in. The Democrat that was running against him was way behind in the polls.
Mm-hmm.
It came out in a divorce that had happened several years before that he'd gone to a swingers club with his wife. They hadn't participated, but she'd felt uncomfortable about it. It was sealed. And the Republicans turned on him and said, we don't want this guy. He's got a scandal associated with him. So they kicked him away, and they said, even though he's got great credentials for all other things, in a small portion of his divorce, it talked about something. They didn't ask his opinion on it. They didn't do anything. They just, the Republicans withdrew favor.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who won that Senate seat? The President of the United States.
Barack
Obama.
Hussein Obama.
If we have problems, if the Republicans have problems, if the Democrats have problems, if you look at the party that's good at banding together and not there are
not
problems.
Attacking its own.
Yeah, there are problems that you actually need to get people out of the party for. The Republicans have been putting people in power who say really, really dumb things about rape and say really, really dumb things about a lot of things, and kicking people out of power who are pretty good as politicians, who actually have good ethics and morals, but have had issues. If we had done that with George W. Bush, we wouldn't have had a president. He had a tough time in college. There's a point past which you have to lay the priority and say, what is it that we're trying to accomplish?
Actually, I think we tend to have presidential nominees who have scarred backgrounds,
right,
without too much trouble.
It's just the pieces in the House and the Senate that are, you can't keep them around.
No, and it's a fascinating thing to watch happen. But from a purely investor's point of view.
Right.
And I want to say the same thing that I said
right before the break.
A long time ago, when I was talking about is that under Republicans, we have generally failing markets.
Right.
And business failures.
Look at history for that.
Under Democrats, we generally have business success and rising markets. So strictly from an investor's point of view.
Let me hit the pause there real quick and say something that I don't think people hear when you say that.
Okay.
It isn't caused by Republicans. Let me make that as clear as is humanly possible. It is not caused by Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
But the attitude of the Republican in not standing for problems causes the problems to be seen, identified, and dealt with. And that's not always good for the economy.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if you have a Democrat in office, they are more laissez-faire, which seems a little bit weird because they tend to be more government control. But when it comes to scandal type situations, if a bank is failing, they tend to have more of a, everything's going to be okay. This isn't such a serious thing. Well, where the Republicans come in and say, this is serious. We have to deal with that.
This is one of those things that I've noticed. And again, it's a little controversial, but it is reality. If you go back over the past quite a few presidents, you can go all the way back to Lyndon Johnson and Nixon. You can go back that far and you'll discover something. Whatever a president philosophically claims to be when he's elected,
pretty much the opposite of what he's
going to do. So the presidents who get elected saying we're going to shrink the government wind up expanding the government, and the presidents who get elected saying we need to expand the government wind up shrinking the government. And I know you may think this is crazy, but
neither of us think it's intentional, but
no,
that's what happens.
And it's a philosophical issue. George W. Bush was elected on let's shrink the government, and he enlarged it rather dramatically.
Through lots of things that happened that were beyond his power. Well, he said, well, we need a whole new department.
We need
Homeland Security.
I'm not sure that we did, but we...
Well,
we were reacting to a
massive attack.
Yes.
We were reacting to something, and he was doing it for the confidence of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And
then you have President Obama elected saying we need to expand the government.
And
everything...
massive contraction.
You actually go out there and look at the number of government employees. You look at the government spending. You look at every metric by which you can measure government since he's been president, and it's been shrinking. It is really...
He's not happy about that, but that's what's happened.
And that
George
is...
George W. Bush wasn't happy about expanding, but it happened.
One of the weirdest things, if you want the market... And I know this is going to sound absolutely backwards. If you want to see the market rise and the government shrink, what we want is the next president to be a Democrat.
Right. I want the... And who comes in and says, I want to... Because we will have a reaction to that. We always do. This is part of the reason why what we're saying about the House and the Senate is if the Republicans take the House and the Senate and they do something that doesn't cause a backlash, the American people don't want bullies. Every time people act like bullies, I mean, if you look at, it doesn't matter who the Speaker of the House is, if they pass bills that don't have votes from the other side of the aisle, and you can look at going back as far as Pelosi, you can go back as far as you want, you can say the major names. When you move forward, the next election, they're out. And we see that because when people get drunk on their own power, the Americans don't like it. Don't like to see it. Doesn't matter the party. We don't like Republicans drunk on their power. We don't like Democrats drunk on their power.
And it's just one of those strange ironies that the reverse happens of what we think is going to happen. But see, that goes back to the same thing we were talking about at the beginning of the program today.
Right.
Is there a major risk facing us right now of an economic downturn and a market collapse? No. Why? Because so many people are worried about it that it is so unlikely to happen because so many people are worried that it's going to happen.
Right.
Now, what I think is really going to actually happen, and again, a lot of people are not going to like this, is the next 2 years following this election cycle, we're going to see the economy improve, the market rise. Things will get generally a whole lot better.
And the president's going to take the credit.
Right.
Presidents always do. They always take the blame, too.
I don't know whether he'll take the credit, but he'll certainly get the
credit. He will be given the credit, yeah. And that's something we've talked about this for decades. We've talked about this as long as I can remember, that we as a country tend to give the credit and the blame to the sitting president. It doesn't matter if it's the case or that they are the one. I mean, George H.W. Bush and Ronald Reagan put the pieces in place for the surplus that happened during Clinton. But Clinton was president when it happened. And there's something to be said about an issue that I see as a problem in our market, in our political system. In our market, companies are so wrapped up in quarterly profits that it's very hard for them to plan long term. They look at the quarterly profits, they want to keep the shareholders happy, they want to make sure that they're happy every quarter or they're going to get voted out. Well, sometimes a long-term plan means you've got to take some losses. And when it comes to the political system, we have the same thing. We need people who are willing to plant trees in whose shade they will never rest.
Right.
That is pretty hard to find right now. Our own self-interest takes the power away from us and says, hey, how are we going to plan for Social Security or for Medicare? Well, we'll leave that to somebody else.
Well, to change the subject, there's been, again, some rattling around, at least in the press, about the dollar losing its reserve status.
Right.
The
mumblings from Russia.
And again, it's Russia that's
of course they want it to be something other than
the
dollar.
But I think you got to sense the humor here, that the Russians want to cobble together something made out of euros and rubles and yemeni, which is the, I hope I pronounced that correctly.
Yeah.
The Chinese currency,
but
the
Chinese
will not allow that.
They
will out of
put
there.
It over the boundaries of their country, the borders of their country, right?
And
it's based on the dollar anyway.
And cobble something together to replace the dollar. So there's a little bit of fear that the dollar is going to get replaced. Fact is, no, it's not going to happen. For starters, there's simply not enough of anything out there.
And that's the thing that I always come back to is, what would you replace it with? And there's nothing large enough. There's not enough stuff out there to replace it.
Actually, if you are willing to trust a basket of all the currencies of the world that's not the dollar,
right?
Then you and right now, to give you some idea, a few years ago, when you actually measured the dollar trade, it was something like 150% of the total trade of the world because people were shifting it. You know, you get double counting on it.
Moving
okay?
it around across places, getting twice counted. Yeah.
Now it's down to 14%. And the reason that this, but this is the interesting thing. The reason the dollar, and this is why they're saying the dollar, the Russians are moving and they're saying, you know, we only 14% of the trade flows around the world are in dollars. Well, the reason is people are extremely confident about the world economy, knowing that it's backed by the United States at this point.
Right.
And that extreme confidence means we can trade and try to get a profit in currencies that may not be there next week.
Right.
Because we can always fall back on the dollar. And one of the great ironies is that the dollar gets used less. When people start talking about maybe we're going to go off the dollar, it only means that there's a tremendous amount of confidence in the world economy, which ultimately is backed, again, by the dollar.
Right.
So if you hear any echoes of the world reserve currency, by the way, this you will hear coming off the dollar. A lot of times you hear something about, like, what if China sells all their dollars?
Right. Well, that would destroy their own economic system. They would have nothing left.
Because their currency is backed by treasury securities. It'd be really difficult for them to, because it would destroy their country.
Yeah, even doing it gradually, it would take a 30-year period to do it without destroying their economy.
The only country, I think, in the world that would like to destroy the dollar, well... Yeah, really. I think the only country in the world that would truly like to destroy the dollar is Russia, but it would also destroy them, but they don't care.
Right, yeah. And this is the thing, even if you were to replace the dollar with a basket of currencies from the rest of the world, which is the only other thing that could possibly replace it, just look at the European Union and the Eurozone and ask Germany if they like the concept of a basket of currencies anymore. They're not real happy that they joined into a basket with Italy and with Greece and with Spain and with Crete.
Oh, yeah. And that,
I mean, come on.
That actually brings up another subject of some significance. You know, the United States, we're talking about the economy recovering and we're talking about backing off of quantitative easing and we're talking about maybe raising interest rates a year from now. The European Central Bank has actually got a negative interest rate now.
Right. They're charging people for deposits.
Not in the regular banks, but basically, right. If you want to deposit money in the European Central Bank, they're going to charge you 0.01% a year. Well, not you. Only you have to be a huge bank.
You have to have
a lot of
money.
This is the point. Europe is still teetering on the edge of deflation and depression. Southern Europe, by the way, Spain still has about 30% unemployment.
Right, and if you go into the lower demographic, the younger people, you're talking about 50% or 55%.
Did you hear what happened this week in Spain of great significance? You missed. I mean, it seems like it ought to be headlines.
Yeah, I thought so
the
too.
The king stepped down.
He's abdicated.
Yeah. He officially abdicated.
It's
they
a
don't
process.
Have a king.
It hasn't happened yet. He's abdicating the process. His son will be stepping into place. He's been approved by Parliament. The old king is still king. The new king will be, you know, who knows, by the time this is airing, the new king may actually be king.
But this is, the interesting thing, at least to me, is Juan Carlos was the guy who pushed for democracy to get rid of the Franco dictatorship.
Right.
And he is now so scandalous, the whole system has fallen apart, and it's at least partially his doing.
Right.
And he's stepping down. It's one of those things where I'm really glad I'm not in Europe. And tied to the economy.
Now, wouldn't mind being in Europe, just not living there.
There's one other thing. Greece appears to be emerging from recession.
Yeah.
I don't, talking about, if you didn't believe in miracles before, I mean, you almost have to, I could see no way out at one point. And Greece actually appears to be emerging from recession. I don't have the details on that, but I think it'd be fascinating to find out exactly what it is they're doing to emerge from recession.
I need to look into that. That's a fascinating area. A lot of it has to do with framing. And as long as the common people of Greece thought it was okay to not pay taxes, then the common people of Greece didn't pay taxes. In California and in the UK, there were a couple of experiments done in behavioral economics. And one major event in a city in the United Kingdom that caused their tax revenues to jump dramatically was a simple written sentence on a letter sent to people. which said that 87% of the British thought it was appropriate and paid their taxes. Mm-mm. Just a statement saying the majority does it caused the majority who didn't do it to do it. It wasn't a lie in that it was that other 13% that started paying taxes, and now they took that rate way up just by saying we do it. In America, that's always been the case. The vast majority of us believe that you should pay your taxes. When you hear about somebody avoiding taxes, you may not turn them in, but you sure don't think of them very highly. Mm-hmm. And anyway, we're almost out of time for the hour. We've got about almost 2 minutes left.
Okay, take your word for that. And you know what time it is, and I don't, so that's good. Well, fundamentally, we'll be back, or not fundamentally, we'll be back in a week. We'll be on the air, and you can give us a call, and you can tell us how wrong you think we are about the economy and about which party is going to have the president.
Yeah, if you would like to contact us off the air, you can reach us locally at 947-1111, or you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. Or you can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com. We have a contact us area. Or you can listen to our podcast there. So until next week, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.